Ms. Wagaman, good morning to you. Let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom. You may proceed.
So I really wanted to focus today on the mainstay of the argument. As you know, trial counsel and different counsel on appeal. So there were ineffective argument, assistance of counsel arguments that were made in the brief. I made them to preserve the defense appeal interest as far as post-conviction action. I think that Mr. Dedlicka, when he files a post-conviction action, he's going to have to be able to testify to the nature of the conversations that he had with his attorneys, his trial strategy that they discussed, and what his counsel's response to him was with regard to retaining experts, or why they chose not to, or if they could find one to support the argument that he had. The record does not support the record on the trial does not support I would also say that in terms of the chronic argument and the DeBray argument, I really made that argument not so much as to say this is what happened at trial and his counsel did not subject the state's case to adversarial testing. It was more to the extent that if the post-conviction claim goes through and certain allegations are made, you add those in the totality, that he did not subject the case to proper adversarial testing in accordance with the trial strategy. So with that said, in terms of the assignment of error on the sentencing, you know, my dog took my assignment of error. I don't know why. I will say that, I guess Mr. Dedlicka, and he can address that in post-conviction action afforded the trial counsel. And I think that it would not pass the prejudice on the Washington. So what I would like to talk about today, what I think is the crux of the matter, which is Mitchell, the Project Harmony Day, and its admissibility under Rule 8033. And we have asserted that it was an error for the court to admit that Project Harmony forensic interview in this particular instance. And in the state's brief, they argue no. It was used, any statements that the child made in this case, that they were made for the purpose of medical diagnosis and treatment. And I think it's important to look at Vigil.
Is it possible that the tape was made for more than one reason?
Well, that's two different arguments. You get to the dual diagnosis. So first, I think that it's important to say, does it meet the foundationary requirements under the Rule 8033 hearsay exception?
What is the purpose of Project Harmony with regard to obtaining a child's testimony? What's the purpose of this?
Well, I think the purpose is, or
is it to, if your argument is the purpose of this is to get this testimony admissible for purposes of trial against the defendant.
Exactly.
As to the sexual assault.
The state would argue it was a dual purpose, and that the statements that were made by the child in the context of the Project Harmony interview were statements that were utilized by the forensic interviewer to determine what treatment she may or may not need medically and or psychologically.
Wasn't that a reasonable use of the project?
Is that a reasonable use?
Yes.
Well, I think...
Isn't one of the goals to try to help the victim, if in fact there is a victim, to cope with what's happened to her or him?
I'm going to answer that question as a man. To admit evidence, you have to lay foundation. So, prong one of 8033 is the declarant's purpose for the statements that are made, and in this case, the Project Harmony forensic interview. Prong two is in whether they're utilized for a medical purpose.
I mean, the victim really doesn't know why she's giving the statements to the Project Harmony.
That's the point.
She's just told to do it.
That's the point. In vigil, you go through that case and the court says...
But somebody has to protect the victim in order for the victim to receive appropriate care and treatment that might be necessary as a result of the activity that occurred.
So let's make a distinguish that here. In this particular case, you have the Project Harmony interview, and the forensic examiner then speaks to Sarah Cleaver, who's the nurse administrator, the nurse practitioner, after the interview took place. And the forensic interviewer then tells nurse practitioner Cleaver, this is what the child has alleged in the interview. The nurse practitioner doesn't look at the interview. She's not privy to that. And in part of the vigil analysis, so the reason why the Project Harmony tape has been found to be admissible, I think is kind of what we were talking about. To protect the child so that her interests are protected and that she's not re-victimized by having to keep explaining what happened. In this particular instance, Project Harmony tape and the statements that were made during that interview, they weren't even used for a medical purpose because the nurse practitioner conducted her own independent questioning, albeit almost interrogation of the child, and it got the exact same information from the child as was adduced from the Project Harmony interview. And that nurse practitioner's medical report was admitted properly, I would submit, under 8033.
Was there cross-examination of the nurse practitioner?
There was.
But there wouldn't be cross-examination of the interview done for Project Harmony?
Well, no. I mean, the person who conducted the interview obviously was subject to cross-examination. But she just made a conclusory statement. That was April Anderson, in the forensic interview. She said, well, part of the reason for the interview is I want to have peer review. I want some notion of whether I've done my job properly. But we make a copy. We burn a copy for law enforcement, so they get a copy.
Do they differ, the video from the nurse practitioners?
Do the statements differ?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to answer that to the extent that I think they're consistent in terms of what was stated in the forensic interview and perhaps what was stated in the nurse practitioner.
So if they were consistent, are you sort of harming your own argument because this evidence came in somewhere else, so the tape is really redundant and harmless?
Well, I think the issue is that the child is available to testify. And she's then subject to cross-examination. I think that having cumulative evidence in a case where it's two witnesses, that's it. He did it, he didn't do it. That's it. To then have the child be able to basically testify twice from the parameters of the information that was obtained from the Project Harmony interview, that's the issue. And I just quickly want to
You're saying then it's prejudicial even if it's cumulative?
I think it's completely prejudicial. The state cites State v. Carter. Well, it's harmless error. Because if it's cumulative, it's not a big deal. Well, if you look at that case, in that particular case, the issue that was being addressed was character, prior bad acts, information that came in, that two witnesses testified as it related to Mr. Foreman, and ultimately the court said, no, that was harmless error because the evidence was overwhelming with regard to Mr. Carter's guilt on the issue of the sexual assault.
So the child testified at trial, is that correct?
That's correct.
The forensic interviewer testified at trial, is that correct?
That's correct.
And the same nurse testified at trial, is that correct?
Yes.
And were any of their testimony inconsistent with the interview?
It was inconsistent with the nuances of what type of penetration, how.
What was the mother's reason for taking the child to Project Harmony?
I'd like to get back. if you look at Vigil, it sets forth exactly what conversation took place between law enforcement, the child's mother in that particular case, the knowledge the child had when the child went to the hospital, to the child advocacy center, which in that particular instance happened to the hospital. In that particular case, Vigil, sheriff deputy said, here's what the CAC is, here's what they do. They do a forensic interview, they do a medical exam, this is why they do it. Mother takes the child to that hospital, has a discussion with her daughter about where she's going, why she's going, and what the concerns are. Daughter then testifies that she's worried that she may have a sexually transmitted disease because the perpetrator, she had information that the perpetrator had some sort of sickness. She was worried that she may have gotten it. Get to the hospital, she's with her mother. Her mother has explained to her what a pap smear is, what exam she's going to go through. There's no misunderstanding. Child knows why she's at the hospital, and she knows what's going to happen. Contrast that with this case. There's no evidence at all. The sheriff deputy, the police investigator, tells the mother, well, she's going to go to Project Harmony. They'll deal with things. I'll get her help. Okay. Then the child drives with her mother down to Project Harmony. There's no testimony as to whether the mother and the daughter had any conversation whatsoever about what the daughter would be doing or what the daughter's concerns were.
Did the mother testify that she was taking her there to get her help?
Actually, it was a leading question. If memory serves me correctly, it was a leading question. Did you take her there to get help? Then it was a follow-up question, and I believe the answer was yes. I don't know what that means. Is that a medical exam? Is that a forensic interview?
Did the child have therapy afterwards?
Afterwards. So the child had therapy afterwards. There's nothing in the record where the child even testifies that she knew why she was going. It's never articulated about what she was doing. So I submit to the court, these are foundational issues. Now, if we're going to say they're not foundational issues, and the child goes to Project Harmony, and if you go to Project Harmony, there's an allegation of sexual abuse, and you're then interviewed by a forensic examiner, and we're going to say that always meets the criteria then of dual diagnosis and falling under the Rule 803 hearsay exception, this court will have to make that determination. But that to me is the issue. What is the foundation for the admissibility of that recorded interview versus the conclusion by those in law enforcement or the person who conducted the interview, that makes the conclusion, well, we used this. This is what it was used for. So that we could be able to explain to the mother or to the child what therapeutic or medical needs they may need. There's a distinct difference there.
Let me, even though you've gone over your time, I want to be clear on a couple of things. First of all, as I understand your argument, if there were two purposes, one for forensic and the other for treatment, that you would concede that comes in under the hearsay exception, correct?
I would concede if the foundation were properly laid.
Yeah, I'm getting to foundation. But if there's dual purposes, that it comes in under the hearsay exception.
Yes.
Okay. Then on the foundation, the rationale for the treatment exception is that the patient who is going to receive treatment will have the incentive to tell the truth to get accurate treatment, right?
Yes.
What has our case law said about minors who are patients? Whose understanding of this process is important in that situation, or have we spoken to that?
And I guess to a certain extent, maybe it did an offhand basis, because in Vigil, it goes through a discourse of what the child understood.
But
so is it
enough if the parent understands and tells the child, tell this person the truth? Is that enough for the foundation for the treatment exception to the hearsay rule?
I don't think so.
And what's your best argument? Why not?
My best argument is that it's purpose that the declarant makes the statement. It's in the rule itself. The declarant is the child, not the child's motive.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
Good morning. Please, please support Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, I don't think there's any real dispute that the Project Harmony interview in this case serves a dual purpose. I don't really think there's anybody that's going to dispute that. I think that's always been the case. I think that's always been the purpose for it. The question about whether or not the 10-year-old victim understood that this was for medical treatment is, I think, somewhat of a red herring. A 10-year-old only understands so much of what's going on, and as you look at the victim's testimony in this case, she was terribly confused by what had happened to her and what exactly was going on. Her mother, however, is an emergency room nurse, and from the moment her mother was notified about what her daughter's allegations were and what was going on, her mother basically said, I want her taken to Project Harmony so she can be interviewed and we can see if she needs treatment of some sort. That's what a parent does, especially for a 10-year-old child who is undergoing this sort of traumatic experience. It's the parent's obligation to ensure that if medical treatment, be it for mental health issues as a result of the assault or physical issues arising out of the result, that's what the parent has to do. As the interview proceeds with the victim, however, it's very clear that she understands that one of the rules of this whole thing is that she is obliged to tell the truth. And she tells April Anderson, yes, she understands that she needs to tell the truth and proceeds to explain to her the situation as it happened. I think this case is at least, it's completely on point, I think, with Vigil, and it perhaps may be even a slightly stronger case because from the very outset in this case, medical treatment was the directive or the impetus, I guess, for the mother to take the child to Project Harmony. As soon as she had been informed by the police what was going on, what the allegations were, she said, I want her taken to Project Harmony, and that way she can be interviewed and we can determine whether or not treatment is necessary in such a circumstance. I think that falls foursquare within the ruling of this court in Vigil. I don't think there's, again, any dispute that it's a dual-purpose interview. Law enforcement, however, didn't take any part in the interview. They're sitting back in a basically a hidden room watching it, and I don't think there's anything inappropriate about that. As after the sort of round one of the interview was completed, Anderson left the room, went back and discussed the case with one of the law enforcement officers and with, I think, a social worker, and came back and got a little more information, a little more clarification about precisely what had happened and the essentially the nature of the penetration that the victim was describing in this case. Again, that serves a dual purpose. One, you need to know what kind of what kind of sexual contact there was, so that if it was if there's a possibility of sexually transmitted diseases to the child, that can be addressed, and also for future law enforcement purposes and potential prosecution of the defendant in this particular case.
Was the child's testimony at trial inconsistent with the statements she made to Project Harmony?
I don't believe so. I don't recall finding any inconsistencies in it. She was pretty consistent throughout about what she said.
And she was questioned by opposing counsel during her testimony?
I'm sorry, was she?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she indeed. And she held fast to her her original statement about that there had been digital penetration. So, Your Honors, I think that the 803 problem, or the 803 issue, is the primary issue in this. We've addressed the other two issues in our brief. If there are questions, we would, of course, be happy to address those. If there are none, we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day is Streck, Inc. versus Ryan Family, LLC. Both Justice Miller-Lerman and Justice Kelch are recused from this matter.